I'm sorry a few minutes later I had to testify in a bill upstairs. We're going to open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 82A, commonly called the Big Look. And we are going to ask for testimony, but we're going to start with those who are the farthest away, not in the room, but the farthest away geographically. So I'm going to ask you to come up. Senator Shields just unfortunately joined us, so we'll move on anyway. There are three of you who are actually here together, I believe, and we only have seats comfortably for two, although we can't pull a third seat up. But I'll call three of you together. You can work it out. Mr. Reeve Henyon, Mr. Arnold Kosan, and Dr. Tulan.
Mr. Chair, if I may introduce
my comments. You probably would do better than I would.
Yeah.
Please identify yourself. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. I have three august members of our organization here. Reeve Henyon, who's from Medford. He's the chairman of the Jackson County Planning Commission. Dr. Nohan Tulan.
Maybe you won't do better.
Dr. Tulan is professor emeritus at Portland State University, and he's the founder of the Urban Studies program there. And Arnold Kogan is the principal at Owens Kogan, which is a land use planning company in Portland. He was former head of LCDC and was involved in some of the original laws that we're now working at implementing. So finally, have these three gentlemen come and testify on the bill. I would be appreciative. And thank you very much for your courtesy and letting them go early.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm going to be the leadoff hitter here. I'm Arnold Kogan, and Stephen just identified us. Do you need more identification than that for your record? No. Okay. What I just handed out is an article that Dr. Tulan and I wrote 2 months ago and was published in the Oregonian. And attached to that is an editorial that the Oregonian printed a few days following our op-ed column that they published. And what we're talking about here is regarding Senate Bill 82 is the principle that it's time to hear again from the people of Portland. What we
at
Oregon.
Oregon.
Portland.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking maybe carrying this bill.
That's why we have Reeve here. It's time again for the people of Oregon to be heard on how they want the land use planning program for this state to be shaped. 32 years ago, when I became the first director of the LCD, Senate Bill 100 was passed. And at that time, we did literally hear from thousands of Oregonians in meetings throughout the state, in direct mail. This was pre-email, but direct mail worked. And people came to meetings, and literally thousands of people, lots of people in this state, felt that they owned this land use program. Enough to overcome three efforts at the ballot box in the late 70s and 80s to overturn the program. And we won by substantial margins to overturn that effort to dissolve the land use program. It's really, and what we're calling it in the planning community, a re-engagement program, and that it's time to re-engage the people of Oregon in this program to decide how land use planning should be shaped, how it should be carried out, and what it should accomplish for the next 30 years. In planning circles, we talk about periodic review where we update our land use plans, but we haven't had any review or any oversight or any update of the program in these 32 years. We now want to look ahead. That's why some we're calling this the big look or the long look, but we're calling it the re-engagement program to get people back into the act of deciding how this program should be shaped. We had a similar bill to this in a last legislative session. It didn't pass. We are convinced that had it passed, had we done that, Measure 37 probably would not have been necessary, because we would have been talking about things like equity and fairness and how should the program be organized, making it unnecessary for those who felt that they needed it to put a Measure 37 on the ballot and have the people pass it. So I think that that's the main point that I wanted to make, and Dr. Toulon then is going to pick up from there.
I'm Nahat Toulon, and let me make one correction. I'm the Dean Emeritus of the College of Urban and Public Affairs at Portland State, but I'm not here speaking on behalf of Portland State University. I represent the American Planning Association. We went through ballot measure 7 6 years ago. We went through ballot measure 37. Both of them passed. One of them was turned by the courts over a technicality. Both of them indicated that Oregonians seems to be either puzzled or concerned about some things that we are doing in our land use planning program. And that, for many of us involved in the program, sounds very strange, because one of the things that we boast around the country and internationally about is the greatness and the success of our land use planning program, being a unique program that managed to maintain the quality of life and put us on the map as one of the most livable states. 6 years ago, the American Planning Association Oregon chapter decided that they would like to have a task force or a group of planners, lawyers, and individuals involved in the land use planning program take on a look to the program and come with some recommendations as to where that program is heading. The committee, as it became known later on as COPE, included several peoples, and I was honored of being the chair of that group. We spent 2 years conducting very intensive surveys and questionnaires and meetings and sessions with individuals in various parts of the state, eastern or all regions of the state. And we came out from our findings, and during our work, ballot measure 7 passed, and we came with the findings that one, there is a very clear perception among Oregonians, and I'm saying perception, that land use planning entails unfairness. So in essence, a perception of unfairness was there. I'm stressing the word perception because I'm not sure that the questions that were being raised actually are realistic questions, but the perception is out there and we couldn't deny it. Secondly, there were major concerns being raised about the fact that the program seems to be implemented the same way in Portland as it's being implemented in Eastern Oregon, as it's being implemented in Southern Oregon, without any allowance for differences between. We are a large state. We are a state with microclimates. We are a state with micro conditions, different economic conditions that prevail in it. But the program seems to be perceived that it is being applied equally wherever it goes. The most common statement we heard is one size fits all, and while that is a point that could be debated as to whether the program is truly being implemented 100% the same everywhere, but that again, that was a major important issue, and we did stress in our report that we would like to see land use planning implemented with perhaps allowing for regional plans to emerge similar to what happened in the metro area 2040. So regionalism was one of the recommendations that we made. We also recognized that no matter what the situation, there will always be cases of unfairness, and that the state should start paying attention to the possibility of compensating people where a genuine unfairness could be established or hardship entailed in trying to implement the program. More important than that, we did make a recommendation that the state really needs to develop a vision, or the program needs to look to the vision for the state, not a vision for the program. There is a difference between a vision for the program and a vision for the state. According to statistics available in the state economist's office, Oregon will have 5.7 million people in the year 2040. Where are those 5.7 million going to be living? If we take past trends, there are 83% of them are going to be living in the I-5 corridor. In 1870, with only 100,000 people, 83% of them were in the I-5 corridor. Today, 83% of the 3.5 million people are in the I-5 corridor. Is this what we want? Is this what we want the population to grow in? Do we want to divert population to other parts of the state? Do we want Eastern Oregon to have perhaps more of its share of development? These are issues that needs to be debated and considered. It's not only the question of preserving land and protecting land. We need to look to the future as we keep growing. And we are not going to stop at 5.7 in 2040. I mean, that's not the end of the world. So in essence, we will continue growing. This is a growing state. So we need that kind of a vision developed to understand where we are going and what is the purpose of the land use program. Finally, I will conclude by pointing to the fact that the Oregon Business Association in cooperation with Portland State University conducted a survey of 500 Oregonians from all parts of the state, asking them about their views on land use planning, and more than two-thirds of them made it very clear that they will give preference to the protection of private property over community good. On the other hand, when they were asked about what do they think contributes to the high quality of livability in the state, exactly the same percentage said that they would like to see decisions related to land based on planning consideration and not based on market conditions. They basically made it clear that what they like about the state is the high quality of life in it, and that land use planning has contributed to livability. So what we are facing here is not really voters who are out to eliminate land use planning, but what we are facing with are individuals who are confused between their concern for fairness and their concern for livability. I believe that the task force or a commission or that will be could be established under 82 will be the right body to actually try to address many of these issues, engage the public in order to eliminate and reduce that confusion that exists. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Reeve Hinion, and I'm chairman of the Jackson County Planning Commission and a member of the executive board of the state APA. Very briefly, just a couple of things. We feel that the most important thing that needs to be done right now is to have this long-range look at the future and to ask the people of Oregon what it is they want out of their state land use planning program. We don't pretend to know. Everybody has got ideas, but I think we need to go out and ask them to make it right. And SB 82 is the best way we feel to do that. One other thing that I just like to mention is that in some ways SB 82 can be looked at as an economic development bill. And the reason I say that is that we've heard people say that one of the reasons that businesses like Oregon is because of its livability. On the other hand, we've heard some people say that businesses reject Oregon because of strict land use planning laws. The amount of money that you're being asked to include in this bill, if you diverted it to some other use, to education, to social services, it's really a drop in the bucket. But it could be very important as a means of really understanding what the people of Oregon want and where they want our state to go. So I'd urge you to adopt this bill, and thank you for your time.
And just to, could I just wrap up with some final thoughts? And what this bill is about, it's about teaching and learning between all the parties. It's two-way communications is what we would anticipate. It sets up a blue ribbon task force that would be representative of the entire state and the interests in the state. It's designed to be a four-year program, two-year intervals. and so there are some important principles that have been embodied in there. A number of us have worked a long time on that bill, and we hope that it embodies all that. But I think the bottom line is that it's an attempt to say that it's time to hear from the people of Oregon again about how they want its land use planning program carried out. So thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
I want to thank all three of you for coming here, and especially Mr. Hinion coming here from Jacksonville. Actually, you told me the Applegate area. I know it's a long drive, and I hope you have other activities here that will make your stay worthwhile besides this also. Committee members have any questions?
Well, yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your folks' testimony. It sort of made me think here. I mean, we're in a very difficult position, or at least I feel we are, as far as allocating money. And I believe in the Oregon land use principle. The voters have made a pretty strong statement with Measure 37 that they are unhappy and potentially do this. I don't know how many bills we've got in Ways and Means that are $800,000 or $500,000 or whatever they are, and they're all good bills. My sense is that I have to choose between education and this, and I'm going to choose education. I'm going to take these $850,000 and stick it into education. I believe in what you guys are doing. Talking about quality of life, the Oregon Progress Board has a thing out called the Circle of Prosperity. Well, and one of the things is that we generate enough revenue from what we're doing here in the state of Oregon. They put up the thing, at the top of the thing is quality of life. Well, I think they've got it backwards. What we need is opportunities for Oregon. That in turn leads to enough money so we can raise school. That in turn leads to quality of life, because what I'm hearing from education people is that their quality of life is broken because their children are not getting educated well enough. So I'm in a kind of a real quandary here, good chairman, and I would appreciate some response and just kind of keep informing me about what's going on here.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to Senator Milton Nelson, and I understand what you're saying. Every dollar is precious, particularly these days and at this session, at this time. And we understand that. We appreciate that. We also understand that there have been some efforts to reduce the amount of money. The original bill was $900,000 plus. We know that there's been some scaling down of that amount. We also think that perhaps you ought to know that we in the planning community have committed that for every dollar that's raised through this appropriation, we will work to raise an at least one other dollar and perhaps more through other sources, primarily nonprofit sources. If no money is raised through this bill, then we would have no recourse to any other outside sources of money. So we would work to bring other dollars in to match this so that the full study could be undertaken. In my consulting business, we come across a number of opportunities where companies are interested in Oregon and are interested in relocating in Oregon. I can tell you that there's a great deal of frustration and disenchantment with the instability in Oregon right now. It isn't just in the planning business, it's in the banking business, in the building business, in the home loan business, and so forth. So I would just return the question, Senator, what is the cost of either not bringing industry that wants to come here, as they would come if we had the kind of program that we had that was stable and predictable, and instead insert unpredictability, instability, doubt about where this program is going. And then on top of that, one can imagine that if we do nothing, if we don't pass Senate Bill 82, I think that in the wake of Measure 37, that it could be predictable, just as Measure 37 was predictable by not getting this bill last session, that what next is predictable, doing away with the whole program altogether, I think could be a very likely outcome. And then we would have a much less state than we have now. So the economy would not be a particularly good environment in this state if we didn't have our land use planning. But I can tell you with a great deal of confidence that the number of opportunities that are awaiting the state now are going to continue waiting to see if we can do something about the unpredictable and unstable environment that we've created for ourselves in the wake of Measure 37. And doing nothing will only continue that unpredictability and unstable situation. I don't know if you want to answer
this one.
Yeah.
Senator, I spent 40 years of my life in education, so I will be the last person to try to draw parallels between educating the children and the young and land use planning. However, when we are making decisions in government, and you make many of these decisions, and I know the difficult choices that you have, you also have to ask the question is, what are we doing about investing in the future that will make sure that we will be able to fund schools in the future? And as Reeve mentioned, this is a bill that is really talking about economic development. We need to understand how the state is growing, where it is growing, what will happen to the different regions in it, what will happen to different areas in it, where the population is going to be located. So 800,000, yes, giving it to the schools today can save 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 teachers. On the other hand, in the absence of that, we could, as my colleague Arnold mentioned, find ourselves losing the totality of the program 2 years or 4 years from here. So we need to move in trying to understand where are we heading and how can we change that program in a way that the public will be able to understand what's being done.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose we could discuss this from a philosophical basis a long time. And you know, I look around the states around us. There are other states around us that have surpluses, don't have any for their public funding, that don't have any land use plan at all. Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico, Oklahoma, the two Dakotas. They basically use their natural resources. And I say my view from the eastern part of the state is that we're missing the boat. I mean, if we're going to have a five million population in the state of Oregon, we're going to have water coming from someplace. We're going to have to start using water out of the Columbia River. We're going to have to start using our forest resources. And we somehow, in our land use planning, those things are not important from my viewpoint. I mean, agriculture is what brought Oregon to this dance, and maybe it's not quite as important as it used to be, but it's still a major important. We've lost 25,000 jobs in the timber industry in the last 10 years. If you have a multiplier effect of about 3 persons per job, we've lost 75,000 jobs in the state of Oregon. Saying, why are we in trouble with our public funds, our financing? That's because, and this is a reflection, I think, of what the people are saying. They're angry at the land use laws because we're not able to do these things. We have a lot of good things going in Oregon. The telecommunication systems, we've got a very low workers' comp rate. We can compete with a lot of states. And when I talk to people at the local level, they love being in Oregon. It's just getting through all the process. And I can understand the reason for a lot of, for some study and things of that nature. Just that, we just don't have a lot of money, you know. So where do we make that decision, or where do we go?
This debate could go on all week, okay, and then to the next week, and we can't make time to do that. But I appreciate your coming and giving your testimony. I would offer a little ray of hope here. I think this actually drives the questions you're asking. When I talk to people coming to the state to go to work, they come here primarily for what I call the second paycheck. First paycheck's the money you make. If you look at our tax structure, if you look at our workers' comp structure, Oregon's a great place to come to. The second paycheck is living in Oregon. And what part of what's made Oregon is our land use laws. There's been some good and bad in that, and there are changes that obviously need to be made. And the discussion I think you want to have is not going to just be in the Willamette Valley. It's going to be all over the state. And our lack of our ability to access our federal forests, our use of our water resources should be a part of that discussion. Not a big part from the federal forest point of view, but it's something that Senator Nelson and I agree on, that is a huge, huge issue for us, and one that's not being properly tapped. And it's really hurting our state not to do so. But we could be here all day talking about this.
I appreciate
Senator
that.
Shields, do you have any questions? Gentlemen, I appreciate your testimony. It's obviously been invigorating. And I got Senator Nelson, who's usually quite quiet to speak up, and it's, I think we know where he stands. But thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Three of you.
Thank you.
Peggy Lynch and Elon Hassan, if I've got the names right. ask, you may not even know each other. I'm going to ask Peggy to go first. It just needs to bring up two at a time and process going. Frank, I may have to go to a meeting at 2 o'clock and the chair is falling.
So it's that way too.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peggy Lynch. I live currently live in Corvallis, but I am a three-time Oregon Pioneer and spent 30-some years in the metro area. And we spend much of our time traveling the state. I enjoyed listening to your last panel. I was down in Jackson County as they were are struggling to deal with a committee for citizen involvement trying to recreate such an entity so that they in Jackson County could have the conversation that we're talking about in this bill. And I certainly hope that you consider it positively. The city of Bandon is another one that has created a committee for citizen involvement just in the last couple of years, again, to reengage its community. I picked up a couple of things. Between 1990 and 2000, the U.S. Census, Oregon's population grew 20%, ranking it the 11th fastest growing state. There are two basic components to population growth. One is the natural increase, births minus deaths, and two, the net migration, people moving in minus people leaving. In Oregon, net migration accounted for 73% of the growth between 1990 and 2000. To anyone who lives here, it is clear that demography matters and that migration can have a wide variety of impacts, both positive and negative, on the quality of life in our communities. In the end, demography may make or break our Eden. This comes from Metroscape. The author is Alton Straub. Then, because I pick up lots of things, there are numerous barriers to meaningful community involvement and public decision-making. Government decision-making processes are often complex and time-consuming, and we know that, and that's been part of the problem. People today have less time than they used to, and more people are cynical about government in general and believe the participation will not actually affect government decisions. For people with low incomes, the cost of transportation and childcare and access to information can be added barriers. Yet public participation is a core principle of our democracy. It is both our duty and our right as citizens to participate in government and civil society. And it is the job of our democratic government to facilitate public involvement in its decision-making and to conduct its business in an open manner. Without the strong voice of ordinary people being heard, democracy loses its meaning. And I think that is the core of this bill. And then I want to share with you part of what I handed out today. This is the League of Women Voters document that was done a couple of years ago as we saw the 30 years coming by and knew that we really needed to talk about land use, its progress. What have we done right? What were the challenges that took place? But as I want to quote one of your previous panelists, Department of Land Conservation and Development Director Arnold Kogan stated, "We've had regular good old citizens, unaffiliated, non-bureaucrat citizens at the meetings. Citizen involvement actually can happen in a positive way and actually can produce a consensus, even though not all people may agree on certain points. He noted that all persons attended were given an opportunity to state their views, and during this year-long process, and this was the year-long right after our land use planning was first, the goals were first set, over 10,000 people participated directly in the drafting process. And I think one of the best stories I continue to share is that, there are now 19 statewide goals. The first 10 were set during the legislative process. But Goal 11, Public Facilities and Services, Goal 12, Transportation, Goal 13, Energy Conservation, and Goal 14, Urbanization, which really is the one that centers around our healthy cities, whether they be in Ontario, Gold Beach, or Portland, all came from the public process. So there is value and there can be product from such an exercise. Lastly, in my little packet of goodies, remember I said that I am a native Oregonian, and by the way, I grew up in the timber industry, so I certainly respect and I still have relatives who do that. But I want to share with you really quickly a document done in part on my dining room table in the late 70s after land use planning first happened. And that's how we engaged Oregonians back then. This document is dated, adopted as an ordinance number 215, September 12, 1978 in Washington County. And what we did was had, we took subsets of our community and went through our community, inventoried what was actually on the land, inventoried what the broad brushstroke said that it might ought to be, and had a conversation, and that included our business community as well as the neighbors. As a result of this, we actually set up what is called an institutional zone, which was the first in the state that people realized and needed to recognize that our institutions have real value and that we needed to protect them in our land use planning. So I just wanted to share with you that that's how we engaged people 30 years ago. And there are people who then began to own our land use planning program. They understood the value. They understood how it both protected our businesses and protected our homes. It protected not only the agricultural industry, but I believe it did protect the forest, the timber industry. And part of the concerns that many of us have now with the timber industry are the fact that we are getting more and more homes up in the timbered areas, which are very dangerous to our timber industry. And then I wanted, again, I was up in Washington County when Intel first expanded. And it, during its testimony, and one of the reasons that it said it came, besides the fact that it had former Tektronix workers and good lots of clean water, was the fact that there was certainty in our land use planning program. The city of Hillsborough had planned for industry in this large industrial area. They also had planned for, and there is now right across the street from Intel, a very diverse housing area, so that its the workers from Intel can walk across the street to go to work. We are really seeing, and we will see, more intellectual economies. We know that the city of Bend is growing by leaps and bounds, and much of the growth relates to young intellectuals coming in, small businesses coming in. We need to preserve what that second paycheck that the chair mentioned, because, in fact, that will be, I believe, what helps get moves us forward in the economy. You've already heard the comment about the Oregon Business Association survey. That was the other issue that I had before me. I just encourage you to really consider this. I've been working on K-12 schools as long as I have been working in land use, and that's for over 30 years as a volunteer. So I certainly can understand and respect the trade-offs that you have. But I truly believe that for my children, for my grandchildren, for Oregon's grandchildren, we need to have this conversation and make the program again belong to all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice testimony. We appreciate it. Kind of curious what that plan looked like 30 years ago compared to the reality of today, but we'll talk about it soon.
Actually, it looks just the same.
Good. So it actually worked then.
Yes, although, see, there were lots of cherry orchards and strawberry fields where the housing is, and that has made people upset because they thought, even though they were planned for housing and businesses, they thought that that those were going to be forever, but they were in the metro urban growth boundary. But that's a good, thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you. Mr. Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elon Hassan for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends of Oregon supports Senate Bill 82. 1,000 Friends of Oregon very much supports the planning process and the concepts behind it. And Senate Bill 82 gives us the ability to have more information as to what's been going on for the last 30 years, and we find that valuable. So I think this study will only make Oregon a better place. There's been some discussion of the budget crunch we're in you know, why now? We've heard some arguments today about if this had started last session, Measure 37 would be maybe different. But this study is planned to be for 4 years. And, you know, my concern is that if we delay this session, then it's going to be delayed for essentially 6 years. We won't be able to look at it again until the 2007 legislation. And then I imagine money will always be short. But I think it's a good investment. It's an important thing for us to know. And it does take time to study what we've been doing for 30 years. So I would encourage the committee to pass it this session and to start this process now, which I think will be good for all of Oregon.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just a quick comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're blaming Measure 37, but, and I don't mean this to be disparaging or anything, but basically I think in the last 10 years the legislature did their job. They passed out a lot of land use bills, water use bills, and I don't know how many were vetoed in the previous administration. How many of those bills? There's like 175 vetoes. A lot of frustration comes out of the fact that some of those, I mean, and we as legislators were responding to our constituents. And so to blame all 37 on one particular area, I mean, there's probably lots of reasons why that's happening. And I don't mean to disparage anybody. That's just a statement of fact that there was a lot of unrest because there were a lot of vetoes at one particular time.
And I would say there's plenty of blame to go around.
That's right. And I don't mean to point out blame, but just context of history.
We have not responded. Thank you both for your testimony. Thank you for coming today. Liz Frenkel and Lane Shetterly.
Do you have to do something?
I've got a 2 o'clock.
Okay. I can give you a courtesy vote for sure.
Okay. I need to be here for the work sessions.
How long are you going to be?
2 or 3 hours. So when you guys get through, it's like
a lot of people.
Don't think I'll set up. I'll set up Bill 1000. You come and get me ready for us. You finish test, well, I'll come back down.
You have another meeting, right?
Yeah, I know.
Down here or up in your office?
LFO. Okay. So I'll be back down about 20 minutes, probably 15, 20 minutes.
Committee, I have to leave just for a little bit to another meeting, come right back, as much as I'd like to stay. And Rose Lane Shetterly, I'm going to have to leave.
Sorry.
I tried to get you up here earlier, Lane. I wanted to get a good shot at you, but I couldn't do it. So I will leave it in the hands of Senator Shields, and then I'll come back in about 15 minutes. Okay?
Let's let Liz go
first. Is that an invitation for me to speak for 15
no.
minutes?
No.
Okay with me. I'm leaving.
Liz Frenkel, League of Women Voters, Chair, and members of the committee. The League does support Senate Bill 82. We supported it in the House. Senate committee. We are supporting it here. And here the issue is not only the whole big picture concept, but it's more than that. It's, are you going to make the investment to continue the process, and I use the word process carefully, of land use planning, because that process, as Arnold Kogan put it, began with the people. And we have heard over and over in all of the Measure 37 discussions, we've heard people telling us the variety of what they thought the people meant. And some people have one view of that, and some people have another. I don't think anybody has a crystal ball on that. I think we need to know. We need to know why they supported land use planning in the poll. Was that just a perception? Who knows? One of the things we need to do is to begin to find out where everybody's at. I don't know how you do that unless you begin at the beginning, and that's with the people. And Senator Nelson, you mentioned the legislature passing all these bills, speaking to the constituents. Again, it's one legislator responding to his constituents isn't necessarily speaking to the representing all the people. And we need more breadth. We need more involvement. If we're going to make the system work, it's got to begin with the people. That was why goal one, citizen involvement, was goal one. I'm not going to preach any more about this, but I do think that we have an investment in land use planning. And I can't believe that we're going to leave this session without honoring that investment by essentially re-engaging the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Liz. Lane?
Thank you, Vice Chair, member of the committee. Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I appreciate the hearing and work session on this bill today. I come to you not only as director of the department, but also on behalf of the governor to express strong support for Senate Bill 82. When I came into the position about 15 or 16 months ago, one of the governor's directives to me was to lay the groundwork for this effort. And in my travels around the state to Hermiston, to Brookings, to Astoria, Madras, everywhere in between, conversations that I would have about the land use planning program when we got to this point really caught people's imagination and attention. There is general and broad support for the notion of the land use planning program, for the benefits that derive from that. I think there is much less support for the current iteration of the Oregon land use planning program. And if you think about it, it's natural. 30 years ago, we began with a program that was, by today's standards, fairly simple and straightforward. There was a lot of vision in that. It was in the goals. There was a great public process that brought those goals about. And over the last 33 years now, we've had the legislature meeting every 2 years, passing new legislation, amending old legislation. You've had the Land Conservation and Development Commission adopting amendments to the goals, administrative rules. You've had the courts and LUBA interpreting the statutes, the goals, administrative rules, and then new rounds of legislation and goal amendments and rule amendments to accommodate those interpretations. And over time, what began as this bold and visionary program has developed into a much more complex and regulatory system, so that folks who come into it now see it as much more about what you can't do than about why we do it in the first place. And for as much time as has passed since we had the public engagement here, folks who were in the beginning, like Peggy Lynch, who can remember the days when this was new, are not in the majority. And most people now don't share that history of the program and perceive it as something much more in the way of a regulatory burden than they see of the benefits of it directly. And this effort, this re-engagement and review of the program, presents an opportunity for us to call a timeout on more piecemeal fixes and take time to evaluate the program, to ask the hard questions. This is what we set out to do. Have we accomplished it? If we've not accomplished it, are there ways that we can accomplish better what we wanted to do? And are there things that 32 years ago, 33 years ago, we just weren't thinking of that are priorities now for the state that need to be incorporated into the program so that they can go forward with it? And I'll tell you, this is where around the state the interest comes in on this. Folks who support planning but not necessarily the program in its current iteration see this as a way to invest the program with greater regionalization, more recognition of differences around the state and how to do that in a rational way. You mentioned water, Senator Nelson. I've heard that in all my travels around the state, that water is divorced from our land use planning program in many respects. And are there ways that we can make water a more intentional component of the program to recognize its relationship with development? Speaking of development, economic development. I think we see economic development today in a completely different frame of reference than we had 33 years ago when we were a natural resource-based economy. How better can we accommodate the current sense of economic development in our land use planning program? These are all things that are complex. They're interrelated, and it's something that we're not going to accomplish with a few bills in another couple legislative sessions. And this process asks us to stand down, to sheathe our swords, and to look at this comprehensively and recognize that the risk is going into this that nobody controls the outcome. We don't have a predetermined agenda here in terms of what will come out. We believe and we have faith in the integrity of a process that is fair and open and engages the public, that we will come out with something on the other end that will have public support and will allow us to go forward productively. I will tell you there's broad support for this. You've heard from some already, from the Oregon chapter of the American Planners Association, from Mr. Hennion from the southern part of the state up to Mr. Kogan in the Portland area. In the business community, this bill or the 30-year review was a component of the Oregon Business Plan approved at the Business Summit at the Convention Center last December. And in fact, on the Oregon Business Plan, this is still on their short list of things to accomplish for the session. John Chandler had to leave. He said, in case he doesn't get back in time to help, good, I'll let John express the support for himself for the Home Builders Association. I heard that laugh. And also the Community Development Forum represents cities and counties as well as state agencies supporting this. It's got broad support. I do appreciate, Senator Nelson, the fiscal issue. How do you take this money? Because every dollar you take to appropriate to this is a dollar coming out of something else. Education in particular, I know very well what you were going through in those kinds of in that kind of decision making and trade-offs. I would say to you one reason to suggest that this is an appropriate session to do this is that those trade-offs will always be there, and I don't believe that in 2 years or 4 years there's going to be any more money in education or any other higher priority that we can easily identify. It's always going to be a hard trade-off, and it will probably only be more expensive if we put it off. And the other thing that I think suggests that this is the time is the passage of Ballot Measure 37. We are going to have to accommodate Ballot Measure 37. It did not replace our land use planning program. Our planning program, the statutes, the rules, the goals are still in place. An effort like this, I think, is an excellent opportunity to move the evaluation of the impact of Ballot Measure 37 and its relationship with the land use planning program into an effort like this. I believe you have some amendments that would accomplish that to make that an aspect of the review as well, because we're going to have to learn to live with Ballot Measure 37. And to accommodate that within the land use planning program, this is the process that we can do that, I think, rationally and thoughtfully. With that, I think I'll conclude my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I am joined with Margaret Kirkpatrick, one of our LCDC commissioners who is here, and also John Van Landingham, chair of LCDC, to indicate our strong support for it, and I urge your action on the bill.
Lane, as I listen to your description, I'm reminded of a story, and we're not going to tell it. Incidentally, I want to interrupt myself to thank you for your wishful thinking with regard to John Chandler.
Just thought I'd stick that in. But no, to get back to, there was once a story told about this little shack that was built beside the ocean over some cliffs, and men used to stay there at night to go down and rescue people that were shipwrecked, and over the years they kept adding on to the shack until they turned it into a mansion. They built tennis courts out back and a swimming pool so you bring the wife and the kids. And pretty soon nobody was rescuing the sailors who were crashing on the edge. I kind of sense that, in a way, our land use planning system has gotten more complex and complicated and amended and so on. And the more you do that, the more you kind of lose that vision that you started with. Is that a fair analogy at all? I don't know about the story, but the point is exactly right on. Mr. Vice Chair. No, it is absolutely the point. That is it. That, again, I think 33 years ago, if you count in the contacts that were made with the public by mail and by
not only public meetings. I think we had upwards of 100,000 Oregonians involved in this process of establishing the land use planning program. People knew what it was. They knew why we did it, and there was broad public support. Since that time, again, because of the, I think, the growth in the regulatory side of the program, that sense of the vision has become clouded. And for those who have moved into the state in the intervening 33, 34 years, they just don't share that. They don't see it at all. They understand, they can see the outcome, but they don't necessarily get the connection between what happens at the planning counter in the courthouse and the bigger picture. So I believe your point is exactly right on, and gets us to why we want to do this. And I would emphasize that, I think Elon referred to this as a study bill. My only correction on that would be, so this is not just study. This is a very much a product-oriented effort. I have absolutely no interest in spending 4 years studying something, and I'm not here as a defender of the status quo. I believe in change, and I think that the best way to make change is to make it rationally and with careful thought to not only where we've been, but also evaluation of where we're going.
Senator Nelson, questions?
Just a couple of things. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lane, I appreciate those good words. And it seems to me you're in a tough position because you're coming to this committee asking for money for Major 37 claims, and you're getting inundated, I understand. I don't know. We got 600 or 700 now.
That's about right.
And you know how to handle them. So, if you get down to the point, do you want the money for the study or do you want the money to handle the 37 claims? that may be the situation we're in.
Senator Nelson, actually, that's a fairly easy question to answer in terms of priorities because we have a legal obligation under ballot measure 37 to move those claims out, get them decided within 180 days, or risk legal liability plus attorney fees and costs. So, in terms of if you look in terms of a risk analysis, clearly that is front and center, the main responsibility. By the same token, I don't think it's necessarily a choice of either or. And in fact, as I mentioned, I think as Measure 37 implements and with the growing likelihood that we will not see legislative response to the measure in this session, I think it's going to be more important than ever that we carefully evaluate the impact of ballot measure 37, and this is the best way to do it. It moves it out of the hotbed of the political environment into a task force that has the support of the governor, the speaker, and the Senate president, and I think really runs very well parallel to ballot measure 37, and is a necessary component. I hope we don't have to choose.
Just one other comment for Liz, and thank you for coming. I appreciate all the work that you do. When you're talking about getting the people involved, well, the legislature is supposed to represent people, and in order to pass these bills, it takes 16 in the Senate and 31 in the House. So, you have a majority of people, at least from their constituents, their viewpoint, and to start legislating by task force, if they do a task force, they better get some legislators involved in it so you can get some sort of buy-in on a political basis, because you can do all the task force study, and if you don't have any political support for it, how many task force studies do we have sitting on the shelf now that we've never had? They're wonderful studies, but we've never, you never developed the political support for it. But thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like we got Margaret Kilpatrick and Art Slack on our list. Oh, good. If there's anybody that hasn't signed up but wants to speak, I'm going to send one of these back over there to make sure we get sign-ups, okay? Go ahead.
Members of the committee, my name is Margaret Kirkpatrick, and Lane Shetterly mentioned that both I and John Van Landingham, the chair of the commission, are here today. I'm the vice chair. and I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 82, wearing a couple of different hats. One of them is as vice chair of LCDC. I was appointed by the governor at the beginning of last year. Also, I am co-chair of the Industrial Lands Initiative for the Oregon Business Plan. And so I have been involved in the industrial lands examinations that we've been doing for the last couple of years in the state, and I want to talk about that in just a minute. I guess I'll go back a few years and just let you know that I first moved to Oregon from Pennsylvania back in 1978, in part because I had come out here in 1975 on a college internship program. My internship was with the Oregon Environmental Council, and it was the session after Senate Bill 100 had passed, and I was an intern just following OEC's lobbyist, who was Roy Hemingway, around the state capitol. In fact, I think my first hearing that I monitored for Roy was in this room. It was Senator Glenn Otto's local government committee, and I remember hearing about dog tags or something like that. And so this is, you know, kind of a little back into the past experience for me, and it was a very long time ago. I left and went back and finished college, and I worked in Washington, D.C. for a couple of years on Capitol Hill, but I couldn't forget about Oregon. And so eventually in 1978, I moved back, and it was partly because it was the most beautiful place I'd ever been in my life, but it was also because I was intrigued by the leadership of the Governor Tom McCall. It was Bob Straub by the time I got back. But this wonderful combination of moderate Republicans and Democrats that could work together for a common vision of the state. And they did some very forward-thinking things, and I think Senate Bill 100 was one of the principal accomplishments that they had. I spent some time working for Bob Straub, then I worked for the House Environment and Energy Committee in the 1979 session, then I went to law school. Since then, I've spent 21 years in private practice in Portland, working as a land use lawyer, almost exclusively representing private sector and corporate entities and getting permits, a lot of land use permits, but also other environmental permits. And just recently, I took a job as Vice President and General Counsel of Northwest Natural Gas. Before I went on LCDC, Governor Kulongoski invited me to chair his Industrial Lands Task Force, which was established in 2003, I think it was. And so we went all around the state, and we heard a lot about the shortage of industrial land supply. It was really hurting our economic development in the state of Oregon, our ability to attract money from out-of-state investors. I then went on, after I was appointed to LCDC, to chair the committee that was created by House Bill 2011 to study the conversion of industrial land to non-industrial use. I'm also on the State Economic Development Policy Advisory Committee to the county with John and a few other people that are here today. And so I guess what I would like to say is that I'm coming into this with more of an economic development and private sector point of view than perhaps some of the people that you've heard from today. And while I have been a strong supporter of the land use program for as long as I've been in Oregon or known about Oregon, I do think we could do a better job now. And I guess I'll stand back and say I think the program has done a fantastic job of protecting our agricultural lands for agricultural uses. And as a result, we have a very strong ag industrial sector, which has done us a great deal of good as we have suffered some of the breakdown in the technology sector, and we've suffered from some other economic, I don't know how exactly to say it, but some economic slump over the last few years. And I think that the program has provided some certainty to businesses in terms of knowing what they can and can't do in other places. But I don't think that our program has done a particularly good job of folding economic development considerations into the land use program as a whole. Particularly, we haven't done a very good job of providing an inventory of buildable, serviceable industrial land sites for people who want to come into the state or people who want to expand in the state. So I guess my bottom line point is what other people have already said today and maybe more eloquently, which is that this program, as good as it has been, was designed and built 30 years ago when the economy of the state and the state itself was a very different place. We had a much smaller population. We were much more dependent on the timber industry than we are today. We had a strong agricultural economy, and that has continued, but that has changed substantially in the last 30 years, and there are some people here from the Department of Agriculture today who I'm sure could tell you about all the changes that have occurred in that sector. And so we have a program now that was built for a different population and a different economy, and it has. And we have tried. This industrial lands inventory problem has been diagnosed for a number of years. I know the legislature has been talking to about it for at least three sessions, and we have tried to make some changes to our land use program for economic development, but it is darn hard to do that. And that's because the system is oriented a different way. And you have very entrenched points of view about things. And so I've become convinced for us really to address the economic development component of the land use program, we have to step back and have the kind of engagement that people have talked to you about further today and build a land use program that promotes the kind of economic development we want. And I don't think we're there, and it's very hard to get here from where we are. Really, that's the point that I would like to make. And I would also like to just respond to Senator Nelson's point earlier about, you know, the potential trade-off between education dollars and dollars for this program. I have a 12-year-old daughter in public middle school, and I have a 15-year-old daughter in high school, and I am passionate about public education. I feel extremely strongly about that. But I also think that for us to have a strong education system, we need to have a strong economy so that there are taxes to put into the education system, and we also need to have a place that once we educate our children, they can work. And I do firmly believe that the land use program is an essential part of that. And I don't think that this process, unfortunately, is going to get any cheaper. I think every year we lose is a hurt to the state, not only in terms of the livability that we all treasure, but in terms of our ability to keep our children here with us and well-educated and to have satisfying lives. So I would strongly urge the passage of Senate Bill 82, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Nelson, any questions?
Appreciate the testimony. It's very good and very practical, I think, down to earth. I mean, we need more jobs. We gotta do that to fund our schools and fund our health care and all those things. And so, I don't disagree with anything you say. I think you're absolutely right.
Margaret, I want to push a little bit because I didn't understand everything you said. You were saying that you come at this from a kind of an economic development perspective, and you've done this industrial lands look and so on and so forth. You said the system is 30 years old and the state has changed, the economy has changed. And you said that a lot of people have very entrenched positions. Okay, is this big look going to represent then a sea change, do you think, in terms of our priorities? I mean, just let me say something to wake up anybody that's asleep. Would it change the priority that we've had on EFU land? Or what are you driving at when you talk about that?
Well, I don't think we know until we do it. I mean, my view is that, or my hope, I guess I would say, not my view, but my hope, is that this would be a wide-open process, not controlled by any particular agenda. I don't think that the current commissioners should drive it, although I do think we should be very deeply involved in it and understand it, because it is, in fact, up to us to implement whatever comes out of it. But I would hope that everything would be on the table and that we would take a look at every aspect of the land use planning program and do the best job we can to make the program reflect what Oregonians value today as opposed to what they valued in the economy we had 30 years ago. So, again, you know, looking at this with an economic development perspective, I think, but Katie Koba and Jim Johnson could actually give you a lot more detail on this, I think we could probably do a better job of accommodating some kinds of agricultural industry than we do now if we were to fine-tune the program. I could be wrong about that, and they may tell you if I am. And I would, in my personal view, is I would really hate to do anything that would harm our strong agricultural industry. And so I do think that that would result in, again, this is me speaking personally, protection of our ag industry to the extent that that's the appropriate thing.
Mine was just for example. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. You can. But I don't know because I'm just one person.
I'm just trying to get my head around what you might be implying by what all you said. I picked on the farming part because it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mark?
Mr. Vice Chair and
Senator. Chair in charge of vice. What the?
And Senator Nelson, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Here to indicate to you that the association supports the passage of Senate Bill 82. We support a comprehensive look at the Oregon planning program and system at this point. I am a native Oregonian and darn proud of it. But I dare say that if I look at the population of the state of Oregon, let's say when I started in the land use planning program or profession, 1969, that the majority of citizens of the state of Oregon that are here now weren't here then or weren't here when Senate Bill 100 was done. And so to say that the values and the vision of Oregonians today is the same as it was when Senate Bill 100 was adopted and the goals adopted at this point, the 19 goals over a period of time, is a real stretch. It's a stretch for me because I don't know, because we really haven't asked those, you know, Oregon citizens recently, is what are your values? And what is your vision for the state of Oregon and the communities that you live in? And I see that is one of the primary objectives of what Senate Bill 82 is about. It may be, after we go through all that, that we may validate a number of the values and the visions that we've had. It may be that some of those will change as a result of the influx of people from other regions, other states, into Oregon, and that some of the things that we held very dearly, like the conservation of agriculture and forest lands, it may be a little different than it is today because we may value something else a little bit more, and so there may be some trade-offs. I've been involved in the legislature for about 12 years at this point. In each session that I've been involved with, the legislature considers a number of bills that will somehow tweak or change bits and pieces of the Oregon planning system. Sometimes we get one that really wants to do major rehaul, but that one doesn't seem to go very far, as you both know. Doing things piecemeal quite often provides a lot of unintended consequences, and we need to look beyond that, and that's another value in Senate Bill 82, is that we can look at a broader picture more comprehensively without just focusing on this piece and then all of a sudden something pops out over here. The legislature has done that for the last 30 years at this point, and we are all to blame. I don't want to cast everything towards the legislature, but we're all to blame for that. The courts, through a whole series of court cases, have made rulings, interpretations of what they thought the statutes meant that now then, you know, become the rule of the land. And unless the legislature comes in and changes those, we wind up with the courts making the decisions rather than good public policy being done in a public policy framework at this point. And as a result of a lot of those court cases, there have been a lot of unintended consequences. that we've had to deal with over the years. The Oregon Planning Program was, and I talk about it, it's a partnership. It was designed to be a partnership between the state and local governments. Now, a lot of people will argue about whether it truly is a partnership or not. But if you look at the goals being adopted at the statewide level, and we have a whole lot of statutes, and I want to talk about that in a second, local governments, cities and counties implement the policy. We implement, we're charged with doing the implementation of the policy. Sometimes the local government doesn't have a whole lot of choice in what they do. And Senator Nelson, I'm sure you realize that because the state in the program has been very prescriptive in what happens outside urban growth boundaries. And I have said before, and I'll say again, that probably 95% of the land use regulations that are adopted by counties are derived either from state statute or administrative rule. And so that doesn't provide a whole lot of flexibility. Not a lot of flexibility in 36 counties as they look at implementing those because the statute says you shall do X or the rule says you shall do Y. And any flexibility is, it really is extremely difficult to do at the local level. So flexibility is something we really need to look at in 2005. 2007 at this point, because not all areas of the state are equal. The Willamette Valley is certainly much different than Eastern Oregon, and we shouldn't treat it the same. So Senate Bill 82 will give us an opportunity to reassess the partnership, the relationship between the state, cities, and counties, and the planning program. Take a look and see if flexibility should be provided, whether it be on a regional basis or a county, however that might be. These are very important things. And we need to look outside the box. Senator Nelson and I go back to you again because we have, in the at least in the circles in the land use planning program in the state that I've travel in, we talk a lot about sharing the growth and the wealth around the state and the economic opportunities at this point. We talk about, you know, it shouldn't all be in the Willamette Valley. But when you look at what we do, our actions in terms of planning and the provision of infrastructure that supports growth and actually encourages growth to come into the state is all directed to the Willamette Valley primarily. Okay, so we really need, if we're really going to talk about sharing the wealth, we need to talk about, we need to look outside the box and make a, if we make a conscious decision to say that we want to encourage growth in Eastern Oregon, in Pendleton, or in LeGrand, or in Baker City, or wherever at this point, that we also help direct infrastructure so that growth can actually take place. Because if you don't do both, or if you don't, you know, you won't get the growth and people won't go there. And if we just do concentric rings around existing communities in the Willamette Valley, you know, that vision that there is a Willamette Valley, my great-grandson may never see, you know, strawberries that's grown in Marion County because it's basically going to be gone. And I'm not sure that that's certainly not the vision of the state of Oregon that I want to see at this point. So, Mr. Vice Chair, the Association of Oregon Counties, for a whole variety of reasons, supports the passage of Senate Bill 82. It's a hard choice. But if we don't do this, I think the consequences, not unintended, but the consequences will be grave because we will potentially see more problems with economic development. We certainly won't see a commitment to have diversity in terms of economic development and opportunities throughout the state because we're going to just do things the way we've done. And I'm not sure that's the best way to do that. And we're going to struggle with the relationships between cities and counties and the state in terms of the program itself, and we won't see the flexibility. I think the other thing will happen is there will continue to be frustration by the citizens, and we are likely to see more initiatives intended to deal with certain issues. And I think that would be a real mistake. I do not believe that Measure 37 necessarily was passed by the voters as a statement against the planning program. It was a statement about fairness. And then what we've done is we've created two classes of citizens in the state of Oregon: those people that may have a claim under Measure 37, and the majority of the land mass and the citizens where there is no claim. And so we've got two land use systems going on now, and the big look needs to look at that and see if we can't bring those back somewhere in balance. So please support Senate Bill 82.
Thank you, Art. We only have one more person signed up to speak, and that's John Chandler. Huh? What I was thinking was that John Chandler once said to me in my office, and I'm saying this for Katie back there, I've always, struggled to preserve farmland, and I was talking about preserving farmland, and John Chandler said to me, there's no better way of preserving farmland than a good coat of asphalt. Do you remember that line, John? cuts down erosion very nicely. So I didn't want John to speak without Katie in the room, in case it was necessary for her to come up and kind of straighten up the windrow, shall we say. Yeah, you maybe you should. With that, I'll let this panel go. John and Abel, counsel, come forward, please.
Since when?
She's listening to you, so watch what you say.
About time, Mr. Vice Chairman. Members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here on behalf of Senate Bill 82. All kidding aside, I want to talk about, I don't know at the end of this if we're going to pave more farmland or not, or we're going to save more, or we're going to paint it green striped with polka dots, or require cul-de-sacs every place, or prohibit cul-de-sacs everywhere, or anything else. We've got to talk about why we're doing what we're doing, because we haven't talked about it for 30 years. That's why we need this bill. And I drag this soapbox with me. One of my members referred to the passage of Ballot Measure 37 as starting a remodel job with a mortar shell. You've got the crater, where do you want the cabinets? And I believe that's true. I think what we saw in Ballot Measure 7, in Ballot Measure 37, was an attempt to have a very blunt attempt. The ballot box, I am not a big fan of direct democracy. Ballot boxes are not a place for nuanced issues, which this, Lord knows, is. It's hardly binary. But what I think we saw there was, we need to talk. Now we talk. And it would, I think it's a regrettable, and I'm sad that this legislature can't find the path to do something with Measure 37. I think that's going to go down as one of the most significant swings and misses, frankly, in my experience as a lobbyist. Let's not do it twice. We're going to have the conversation about land use planning in this state. We can either have it intelligently, comprehensively, sensibly, with enough money to do it right, or we're going to have it at every permit counter and every planning department and every city council and every county commission hearing in the state. This ain't going away. We don't know why we're saving farmland. We're doing it, though. Now, I'll say, for the record here, I think we have done a damned good job of saving farmland. We have done a pathetic job of saving farming. And they're different. There's a lot we could do for the ag industry in this state. If we were really serious about saving farming, we wouldn't be seeing the canneries close in the valley. We would not be seeing the secondary processors move out of state. We wouldn't have to worry about whether or not we had to haul our cows to Boise or beyond to have them butchered. If we were serious about saving farming, it wouldn't just be EFU zoning and 80-acre minimum lot size and all the other stuff. That's a whole separate conversation, but it relates. That's a part of the economic development we need to talk about. If we were really serious about our land use funding, starting today and going forward, we wouldn't have the plan we have now. We're still fighting 30 years old battles. And I really, really urge you, and please urge your colleagues in both your caucuses, this ain't about an outcome. In fact, if this is about a predetermined outcome, it'll be a disaster. This is almost tabula rasa. If we didn't have 30 years of court cases, litigation, legislative fiddles, ballot initiatives, if we were starting today looking forward, we're going to set up a land use planning system for the state of Oregon, what would it look like? That's what we need to be talking about. Has nothing to do with any bills I've gotten passed or court cases Thousand Friends has won or positions of the cities or counties or anybody else. It has to do with what the people of the state of Oregon, if we were starting over, want to see. And if we start with a predetermined outcome, be it the home builder viewpoint or the environmental viewpoint or the ag department's viewpoint or anybody else's, it'll be a waste of time and money and we'll screw things up worse than they are today. Because part of the reason we're in this fix is that we've all fiddled and we've tweaked and we've pulled here and we've sued there and we've ballot boxed there and it is a complete mess as a result. I'm very passionate about this. I've been playing in this sandbox for a long, long time. It is depressing how hard it is to get to a policy discussion. There's a bunch of smart people around the table. None of us can quit defending our positions long enough to have an open conversation. And that's part of why when this bill was up last session, Mr. Stacey isn't here today. I presume he still has this position. I certainly do. If I'm asked to serve on this panel, I will not do so. This can't be the combatants. This can't be the folks who've staked out territory. This has to be regular citizens engaging again for the future of their state, not about any one of the 19 goals, not any one of the statutes, not any one of the things we've already done, but to see what we need to do in the future. Because it is a mess, gentlemen, you know that. And the only way to unmess it is to get smart about it. And I think this bill gets us there, and now I will hush and take questions.
I do have a question for you. How many people would be left if you eliminated all that had staked out positions?
We may have to import them.
Okay.
It's like picking a jury, I suspect, Mr. Vice Chair. Uh-huh. Folks that don't have an opinion probably don't want on there in the first place. And clearly, I made that same comment earlier this session. One of your colleagues pulled me aside and says, like, you won't be in the room. Well, of course I'll be in the room. Of course the LCDC will be in the room. Of course Thousand Friends will be in the room. What I'm trying to say is, this shouldn't be experts fighting great theological debates. That's what it's turned into. And it's entertaining if it's somebody else's issue. It's aggravating when it's mine. It needs to be your constituents and your constituents, people that care about this state. Yeah, they all have opinions. Of course they will. But the opinions of the combatants have gotten us into a pickle, so if nothing else, I think that'd be evidence that we ought to be excused from further pickling for a while.
Senator Nelson, any questions of this witness?
I have lots of questions and lots of thoughts about it. I mean, you can't disagree with what I think most of the witnesses said, including the good Mr. Chandler. What would happen if we just went back and passed Senate Bill 1 again, or 100? What if we just went past and throw all this other stuff again and start all over again?
Mr. Vice Chairman, member of the committee, danged if I know.
I mean, we've added all these things onto it.
If you could unaccrete it, if you could scrape the barnacles off, that might not be a bad thought. One of your colleagues actually had the notion that we ought to put it on the ballot and see what happened. Not telling anybody what it was, just sneaking out there like an alternate universe kind of strategy, I guess. The system, the big goal is probably not that bad. But we don't know that. See, if I can take a little bit of issue with your question, I even think that much of a presupposition is a mistake. I'm not saying Senate Bill 100 is bad. I think it's a fine piece of work. I'm saying that we are too tied to our history. And I really think we need to also keep the current system running, using the term running somewhat loosely, while we see if we need to create another one. And if we do, swap them out at some point in the future. You'll notice in the bill that it is very vague, and you'll notice that the description of the combatants is very vague, and you notice that all three, the governor, the speaker, and the president, have to agree, which ought to be a challenge, ought to be kind of fun to watch, frankly. I'm not sure they could agree on free beer at the moment, so we'll let them wait a little while. And you'll notice that we deliberately didn't presuppose that the system wouldn't be just fine when we got done looking at it. Maybe it will be. I have any doubts. But we're trying to, I think all of us put the bill together in the first place, try to do as much as you can, divorce yourself from past battles won or lost, to say, let's take a look.
Follow up, sir.
Yes, sir.
Realistically, you can do all this task force thing and come out of the sort of thing if you don't have political support for it. I mean, you then send it out to the people, I guess, and have them vote for it. But I mean, you're not, I don't know, you're not presupposed you have any politicians involved in this task force process.
Mr. Vice Chairman,
that for me, yes.
Well, I'm not presupposing there won't be either.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things about, and you've seen this in this testimony today, you start naming folks to anything, and all of a sudden, we all have our own list of people that need to be at the table. That's why none of us are called out. My personal view is, I think it'd be a mistake to say ought to have legislators on there, because that's a call out. And I'm trying to be pretty, you know, maybe a lot pure here, maybe too much so. Oh, hush, Peggy. It happens every now and again. Don't tell anybody. I got a job to protect. But if you could, I think we welcome to have legislative involvement. The problem with having legislative involvement, taking nothing away from you two fine gentlemen, is that there's politics associated with the legislature.
Hey,
I'm glad you're
surprised.
Sitting down. I'm sure that'll come as a shock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this ain't political in that sense. It's political in the broadest possible Greek sense of what we're trying to do as a society. I really believe that. Now, if you want to get appointed, have at it. I'm personally busy that whole year, I hope.
Water at Andrews, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to do navigability. That sounds easier.
Well, sounds like
aggregate. That's where the money
aggregate,
is.
Yes,
that's where the money is.
Yeah, that's the pits, man. I've been there.
Yes, you have.
I know that Katie Coba would like nothing better than to escape from this room right now.
I don't think I said anything.
But I'm not going to let her. I'd like her to come up and respond to your saving farmland versus saving farming. Just a little theology might be nice at this point. I'm not sure. I'm struggling with this because I have been, as John knows, a defender of farmland, but he makes a good point about not saving farming. What do you see that this might contribute to the world you live in?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for the opportunity, I think. I'm Katie Coba from the Department of Agriculture. I actually agreed with a lot of the things that John said. And John is right in that the land use system alone is not going to be the end-all or savior for agriculture in this state. There are a number of challenges that the industry is facing. Land use is one of those. Water, Senator Nelson is an expert on, is another one. Global competition is a huge issue for us. The price of our inputs, labor being the number one input, is another big issue for us. So we're trying to get our arms around a ton of stuff to keep agriculture in Oregon competitive in a global economy. I'm also very optimistic about the future of Oregon agriculture, and I probably should be, or I shouldn't be in this job. But that being said, there's no question that land use and Oregon's land use system has a major influence on Oregon agriculture and the future of Oregon agriculture. I also agree there is no preconceived outcome to this effort. I think this effort is absolutely critical. Our Board of Agriculture has taken a look at this and is supporting Senate Bill 82 and this effort. I think we're probably all a little bit nervous going in because, number one, we don't know what's going to happen, and number two, it could fail. But I think all of us would also say we're at a point now where we have to do it. I don't think we have a choice. And in terms of the resources, again, very sensitive to the challenge that you all have in front of you in terms of determining a state budget. I also like to throw out one of my favorite statistics, which is 1.5% of the general fund of the state's budget goes to the natural resources agencies combined. And K-12, community colleges, higher ed get a far larger than 50% share of the budget. So I would make the argument that not only can we afford this, but we should afford to make this investment in terms of Oregon's future.
Katie, I have one final question, and that's, can you give us a little comparison between how Oregon does in terms of agriculture and agricultural land base and farming as versus other states that don't have as good a land use planning system? Or is that pretty hard to do?
Mr. Vice Chair, that's a very difficult question. part of the challenge is because agriculture from state to state is so diverse. Agriculture in this state is so diverse. We do have one of the previous gentlemen testified to the fact of the various kinds of microclimates that we have in Oregon, and that contributes to the incredible diversity of agriculture in the state. Over 220 different products that we grow in Oregon. You compare that to the Midwest, where you can count major, you know, farming on one hand. We're somewhat like a California or a Florida from that sense, but certainly not the volume of a California or Florida. The other thing that's wonderful, I think, about Oregon agriculture is 97% family-owned farms, family-owned corporations. It is still family-owned operations here in the state of Oregon. Again, a kind of a difference from agriculture that you see certainly in California or the Midwest. So we're pretty unique, and we're pretty special, and frankly, that's a lot of what we use to market our products.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for carrying this for me while I was gone, and I appreciate it. Katie, I would make a comment about the last part of the conversation. When you look at the western states, you'll find that you look at Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, they're losing population every year. They're slowly getting smaller and smaller and smaller, but in certain parts of those states, that's not happening. Take the Bitterroot Valley in Montana as a good example. It's being rapidly chopped up into five-acre parcels. The Big Hole River area is going through the same thing. Large ranches are being broken up, broken down into small acreages. And that's the kind of thing I don't think we really want to see in our state. And people who were vehemently opposed to any land use planning in those states, especially the ranchers and the farmers there, are now taking a second thought and a second look at that. They're losing the water table as more wells are drilled. They're losing their ranches. And they're wondering what happened to them. They're kind of bewildered in the last 10 years as people from California and back east come in, chop the land up, and they wonder what happened to them. So I think that speaks well that the rural areas of our state need this as much as the urban areas do. But thank you for your testimony. Thank you for coming. And is the last of the testimony now, I believe?
Yeah, we tried to find ways to keep John Chandler from getting up here, but he was the last one.
That's a tough thing to do, isn't it? And I expect next time for both of you to do better when Chandler's in the room. I can't carry that ball all the time. Okay. We'll close a public hearing, and I'm going to open a public work session on Senate Bill 82. I want to inform the committee of several things that are going on with this bill. You may have heard already. The bill originally called for a funding level of $989,426. The co-chair has recommended we drop that to $600,000 and take it out of this and put it into the agency bill for LCDC. This is the agency that will be running this. That will slow their ability to work this the first 2 years. This is a four-year proposition, obviously. Also, when you think of this, remember that our previous testimony from the director, Lane Shedley, is they have got their hands full with Belt Ridge 37. But that does not mean they shouldn't be doing this at the same time. We had that discussion very early in this committee. We went back and forth on it. And after a lot of discussion, I think the consensus was that we probably need this bill more than ever, that the big look does need to go forward, especially as a result of 37. But this is an agency that's going to have some real challenges over the next 2 years, and when they report back to us in 2 years, whoever's sitting in on this committee will have an opportunity to listen to them, see what their experience has been, and how far along they've gotten with the big look, and how much more they need to complete that over the next 2 years in the face of whatever's happened with 37 by that time. Also, know that 1037 will probably be coming back out into the Senate on a very limited basis, just with some definitions, we hope, just to clarify things in hopes that we'll be able to handle ballot measure 37 claims in a more expeditious fashion. And it will not be an attempt to revamp or to significantly change 37. So we've got a lot of stuff kind of in the milieu here yet, but I think we'll see some clarification in the next several weeks. Yes.
Question. Some of those who gave testimony, and even good Senator Nelson, referred to the budget piece of it as around $800,000, and now you've got a different number. How long ago did that number come out? How long ago were these people working when they were talking about the 850? Did this happen the last 15 minutes or
I believe the original number was $989,426.00. Okay, but I may be wrong about that. LFO, can you help us?
Mr. Chair and Senator Shields, in the bill itself in Section 4, there's an appropriation in that amount, and I believe that that was put in there prior to finalizing the governor's recommended budget for a policy package that is tied to this bill, and that is Policy Package 103, and in your packet of information today, I did distribute that to you, and if you look in that narrative about the package, you'll see that actually in the agency's budget, the policy package is for $859,823 general fund. And I did ask them several days ago, seems like several days ago, I think maybe it's actually a couple days ago, based on this email, what would happen if the appropriation was closer to $600,000. And what they responded with was saying that they would have one less staff person, and that would probably be the information officer position, and then they would also have to take some of the funding out of the services and supplies that are in that policy option package. And obviously that would cut back on some of their efforts in the 05-07 biennium. They wouldn't get as far along as they could with more funding. But again, this is a four-year process, and so the hope would be that the next legislative assembly would appropriate the amount of funds necessary for them to get a final report with recommendations to the 2009 legislature, and as you know, this legislative assembly cannot make any promises as to what the next legislative assembly will do. So even if you gave them the full $859,000, it's not a sure thing that the next legislative assembly would fund this process.
Okay. Thank you for the information. Any questions?
The chair will accept a motion to conceptually amend Senate Bill 82A and delete the Section 4 of the bill, thereby removing the general fund appropriation. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Any questions? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Does LFO need to lead us to any part of this at all? This is a pretty simple bill, so I think we can just go straight forward with it probably. Chair will accept a motion now for Senate Bill 82A is conceptually amended to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass as amended. Do I hear any?
So moved.
Any questions? Any discussion?
Just a quick statement. I agree with the concept of all this. I still have some reservations, but I'll support it going in. But this has been a very good discussion here today. And just from a practical, realistic viewpoint, I don't know if anything's really going to be accomplished. It'd be nice to get 10 people that we don't know who are. I think we're throwing good money after bad here. These folks wouldn't agree with that, but it is possible that nothing's going to come out of this. And I guess we have to try, and so I'll support it from that viewpoint. But I have some reservations, I guess, from that viewpoint.
I appreciate your vote. I appreciate your reservations. I'm personally convinced that I was not 4 or 5 months ago, this conversation does need to occur, and that the information we'll garner from this four-year conversation with Oregon will help guide us. I don't think ballot measure 37 is the end of this by a long shot, and we're going to have to somehow get enough information together and build a consensus once again in Oregon about what our land use laws are going to look like, and we need that information, that conversation to do it. I think ballot measure 37 is going to show us that it is not what we want, where we want to go completely, but partially. The question is, what parts of 37 do we want to keep, what parts do we want to discard, and where do we want to go in the future? And I think this conversation will help us, but that's my opinion. In 4 years, I'll be in Pendleton, and you can buy the dinner if I'm wrong, or if I'm right. And I'll buy I like the heads I win, tails I lose scenario as much as I can.
Here's a chair.
Senator, any comments?
I was just going to comment that, like you, I've been kind of quote-unquote converted on this issue in the last 4 or 5 months. I thought we had so much to do with ballot measure 37. It wasn't a good time to look, but I've totally changed my mind, and it's thanks to the input of folks like those here today.
And hearing no further objections, the motion is passed and so ordered, and I will close this work session. Thank you all for coming and spending the afternoon with us. We do appreciate you. Thank you very much.
I just want to say